Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of What the Hal. And you know, I got to tell you, one of the dangers we face in Southern California, where we're based, is wildfires, brush fires, and they seem to get worse and worse every year. More recently, the Woolsey Fire, the Thomas Fires. These were just horrible, hideous fires that caused so much damage. Homes were destroyed. And it's always a good reminder for us to know what to do in those situations and to learn a little bit how to harden our homes, and that's what we're going to talk about on this episode. Well, let's have you introduce yourself.
I'm Scott Harris, Building Construction Group.
Captain?
Tony and Brennan, Public Information Officer, LA County Fire.
Steve Kaufman, Fire Captain, Ventura County Fire Department, and I act as our Public Information Officer occasionally.
So, you know, we're talking about wildfires, and we're talking about the dangers they pose. We're talking about they seem to keep getting worse. And some people say, well, that's kind of what's happening with global warming, that we're creating conditions that just make these fires worse and worse. Do you guys agree with that?
Well, I can say that we definitely had an extended period of low rainfall in the Southern California area for the past 7 years, with the exception of last year. And when you have that extended low rainfall, it directly impacts fuel moisture. And when fuel moisture is low, then you're absolutely going to see more explosive fire conditions.
Boy, we did. With the Woolsey Fire, especially around Malibu, bam, that stuff just, you know, took off. And in Ventura County with the Thomas Fire, terrible fire.
United.
And, yeah, it was awful. And, you know, what was your takeaway from that Thomas Fire, Captain Kaufman?
Well, the thing probably that resonated the most with me was the thirst for information that the public had and us trying to keep up with that thirst of information. And it was a 24-hour news cycle. It wasn't a morning or an afternoon or an evening. It was a 24-hour. People wanted to know at every time of the day or night what was going on with the fire.
And that's because the fire was so awful. I mean, that fire was crazy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it just went this way, and then it went that way, and then it went up there, and then it went down there. And that was the wind condition. Now, we have pretty bad wind conditions sometimes here in Ventura County and even here in Los Angeles County, but that was a little over the top on that one.
Yeah, we saw a fire move 14 miles in a matter of 5 hours.
That's crazy.
Luckily, we were able to evacuate over 20,000 people.
What would it normally move at?
You know, it's all variable. It depends on the slope. It depends on the fuel moisture on the slope. It depends on the weather conditions. There are so many variables.
My sense, though, is it tends to be like a slow-moving car. I mean, it tends to eat up a little fuel, eat up a little more, move here, move up, move down. At sundown, maybe it slows down some when conditions change. But that fire was just like going.
So one of the challenges with the fires that we've seen over the last 6 years, especially our wind-driven fires, is those drought-like conditions we were talking about earlier. Normally, without those conditions, if fire burns up a hill, it will preheat the fuel above it, and then that fuel model will burn, and then it will keep on moving its way up the hill in that kind of manner. With the drought-like conditions, all our fuel beds were so receptive to fire that once there was fire in the fuel bed, it was almost all consuming at once. And those are some of the conditions that we saw in a lot of the recent fires.
It's almost like we have to be even more cautious than ever, isn't it, Scott?
It is. You know, it's when you see how many homes that were lost and how many structures were lost, it makes you think, is there a better way? Could we be doing something better, right? Can we rebuild and do it differently this time? I think the answer is yes, we can. But it's about getting the information out to people.
I wouldn't even hazard a guess at how many homes are in Southern California. But I would hazard a guess of how many are occupied by people that can't afford to do much to their home to make it more fire resistant. And so that being the case, what are some of the lesser expensive things that people might be able to do?
Yeah, some of the lesser things you can do is changing your landscape, right? We talked earlier about not having the wood chips around. You can do a beautiful gravel bed. You can do things like aloe vera, blue agave. You can do rose bushes. But one of the things that we see, you know, create the fires is really one of the most vulnerable places is two things. It's the windows and doors where they have glass, and then also your attic, which is like kindling up there. So what you can do, go up into your attic. If you see sunlight, if you see daylight up there, try to find ways to put a mesh, an eighth-inch mesh screen that the captains mentioned earlier. You can do things like taking off the roof vents and closing them up. We do a little more extensive things, but there's also there's a great paint, Hal, that's called a fire preventative paint, right? And so you can put on there, and once it gets hot, it can actually give you a 1 to 2 hour fire rating, and it'll actually expand and creates a kind of a barrier, if you will. And so you can get a 2 hour fire rating where versus something could have just caught like that.
One of the things that's really interesting to me is the intensity of the heat of a fire. So a fire could burn at 1,200 to a couple thousand degrees. That's pretty hot. And so the fire doesn't have to get to your house to start a fire in your house. It can get maybe 50 feet away, and all of a sudden that radiated heat
can cause the glass.
Can cause, yeah, the glass, the vinyl finish, the wood chips, any number of things to take off, and all of a sudden now you got a problem, and the fire never actually had contact with your house. It was the radiation of the heat.
Yeah, well, the radiant heat's a big deal, and we were talking before about the windows and having the dual pane windows to give you a much better chance of that window if it does shatter, giving you the secondary chance of the second window. But the big key is with that is wherever your windows are, you don't want to have them in an area where they are facing a large area of vegetation, because that stuff gets involved with fire. It produces your radiant heat, and it defeats the window. So those larger fuels, the big trees, the heavy stuff, that's where you're going to see your high radiant heats. So having that stuff, you know, limbed back, your trees far back from the house, keeping that defensible space is critical for the radiant heat. And then the defensible, you know, the hardening of the home for ember cast, because you saw during the Woolsey fire with 75-mile-an-hour gusts, you had embers that were 3 and 4 miles out in front of the head of the fire. So the spotting that's going on and those embers getting established inside of attic spaces and vents and roofs, balconies, it was a major issue for us, a 14-mile-wide fire front.
You know, one of the things that is in my memory is that the Orange County Fire Department wanted to show me how hard it is to fight a fire when the temperature is over 100 degrees. So they suited me up in fire gear, and we started doing backfires on a hillside. Now, it's over 100 degrees. I don't remember exactly how much over, but it was over 100 degrees. And I was pouring sweat like there was no tomorrow. I mean, it was like somebody turned on a faucet on my forehead, and I'm just water just coming out of everywhere. And it was scary. I was dehydrating very quickly. I couldn't get enough water when I got back down the hill. I couldn't believe the conditions that the firefighters had to deal with. And that's what you have to deal with. That's what your firefighters have to deal with when we get, like, these summertime temperatures over 100 degrees. It's impossible.
It's very arduous. You know, and in the wildland environment, it's like that. And also inside the structures, you know, when you put on a full turnout ensemble, you know, it's fully encapsulating. The whole idea is to protect your skin from being exposed to that heat. And it works both ways. The person inside that ensemble, it retains the heat. A lot of fatigue comes from wearing stuff like
that. And I think I would be exhausted and terrified, incredibly anxiety-provoked, if I had to shelter in place in one of those little tents. You have these little tents that basically are like a little pup tent, real small, almost like a sleeping bag type thing. And if you got in the way of a fire, you have to crawl into that thing and stay in there until it's safe. Oh, my God, I can't even imagine what that would be like to know that fire is racing on top of you and around you, and you're in this little thing. And if you move, you may be burned. You may die, you know?
Yeah, so that's a last-ditch effort that we would use. One of the things that we do is we're constantly training. I've heard our firefighters are referred to as industrial athletes. It's a physically demanding job, and so we train both physical fitness-wise, and then we train for the job. So we have practice burns. We have classes that we take every year before wildfire season or the known wildfire season in July. All the fire departments in the state of California go through a basic refresher class just so we can start thinking about wildfires again. It's an all-encompassing job.
It's a big job. Tough. Yeah, it's a big job. Difficult job.
I thought my job was tough until I met you guys.
So you're right. So when we talk about hardening the home, you have a video now, basically, about 4 minutes long. Yeah. And it's available to people where?
It's a fire.lacounty.gov. For the Ready, Set, Go, it's /RSG. But if you go on to our webpage, there's a link on there for your hardening your home video. And it gives a lot of techniques, construction techniques, materials that are out there that can be purchased, and methods that you can use to limit the ability of embers to
take
over.
Why did you guys decide to do that? Well, the hardening of the home.
Because we recognize that that is one of the critical factors of protecting your home during a wildfire, is that if you have proper construction techniques, you're paying attention to those items, which a lot of times are just small items, screening an attic vent. You know, an inexpensive item can make all the difference. And any of us that have operated in the wildland fire environment, we know that simple change, that simple modification can mean the difference between your home making it and not.
I want to ask you about foam, because there are foams, and I don't know what the brand names of these things are, but every year Ventura County Fire has out at the Reagan Library a pretty interesting fire demonstration. First of all, they bring in tons and tons of goats, and the goats go up and they go up and down the hill, and they have dinner.
The best gardeners ever.
Oh, my gosh, the lawnmowers, and they're just eating like there's no tomorrow. It's like a feast, you know. But they also show us what it's like when you have a spontaneous burn of a structure, which they'll put up as a small little structure. And there's a foam that sometimes you'll use to put on the outside to show how you can have a fire-resistant surface, I guess, is the way to put it.
Correct, yeah. So the way that we do that display is don't look at necessarily that it's two structures. We're just trying to make a fire that puts out a lot of heat, right? So you could imagine that as a shrubbery or a tree or a bush around your house. And so the way the gel works is our firefighters spray it on a house or a structure, and it has moisture in it, and that gel with the moisture basically fights or resists the fire, or that heat that the fire is putting off of it. But it only lasts so long. So we were talking about this earlier before we did the podcast. Especially with the heat and the wind-driven fires, it's that moisture is going to come out of that gel. So we can go back and we can respray it with water, and it'll reconstitute that gel again. But it doesn't last for days.
It's only good for about 6 hours.
About
something
6 hours,
that.
Yeah.
So let's say that I'm in my home and my neighborhood's threatened. I have the gel, and you guys want me out of my house. I go, okay, yeah, let me just do something real quick. And I spray the gel on the trees around my house. I gel the house, and then I leave. So for about 6 hours, my house may have some level of protection.
Correct.
That's not a bad idea, is it?
It's not a bad idea. So one of the things that we talked about also earlier was Ventura County Fire Department's talking about protecting your home from the inside out. In addition to our fire hazard reduction program that we make people clear their weeds up to 100 feet from their house, we want you to look at your house from the inside out. With that, starting at the house, we want you to have no vegetation or bark from the house to 5 feet, 5 feet clearance around the entire house. That's going to give us a basic beginning of that defensible space. The other thing that we're seeing is if you have shrubs or bushes under windows, the shrubs or the bushes under windows are going to threaten that actual window if they catch on fire.
So one of the things you talked about was wood chips. And the thing about wood chips is that people use those in a decorative fashion. So you put some wood chips out in the planter,
right,
and you put some little, you know, succulents out there or something. You've just set yourself up, haven't you?
Sure have. I mean, the wood chips, I've seen it many times. That's a, you know, as we refer, you heard Captain here talking about a receptive fuel, but it absolutely is that. They're dried out pieces of wood, and ember gets in there. You get that small fire established, it can move into a heavier fuel, and before you know it, it's on your house, and it transmits all the way up. It can really act like kindling, like you would see in a campfire.
So keep them for your smoker.
Yeah, for your smoker. But I think that 5 foot space that Captain Thorne was talking about here is to keep that away from the house.
But LA County doesn't do that.
Well, we preach, you know, defensible space. We talk about removing all flammable items away from the home, and that means we're talking about lawn furniture, any type of, you know, a lot of these areas, like you go up into the wildland urban interface, a lot of folks are kind of have that frontiersman type mentality, and they'll have their firewood chopped up and stored in bulk right up against the house. that's a critical mistake, because there's a lot of void spaces in between those logs when you stack them up, where an ember can get in there and take hold, and it can transmit fire to the structure. So we try to we tell people to remove furniture, anything that can burn directly up against your house. And the other component is to remove the vegetation that's flammable. Use fire-resistant landscaping. You know, people want to have their landscape look beautiful. Use vegetation that is more fire-resistant.
Well, Scott was talking about, like, blue agave and things like that that you could use.
Yeah, but, you know, I have a question for you, too. I'm just from a builder's perspective and when living in Los Angeles. Every home that we build here has these seismic codes, right? Because we're all concerned about earthquake. But we don't have the fire codes that I'm seeing for the residential homes. So I'm seeing them in the commercial buildings, but we all go home to our residential home. They're not there in the same level as a earthquake preparedness, right?
Well, and actually, not true. There's plenty of fire codes, and when you put your house through the permitting process and they come out, there's a bunch of building codes. But what you're talking about is, you know, a lot of older construction.
Yeah, I should probably correct myself. You know, in a very higher fire zone, which we do with the homes in there, there are a lot of protective measures that we do. But then you roll down the street, and I don't have those same kind of level of measures to do. And I feel like it's something that we should be doing on all homes, you know, at this point, not just the homes that we think are vulnerable.
So let me interject here, because the state has required that all homes in the future have solar panels.
Yeah.
That's an interesting change in thinking about the architecture of homes in Southern California. Let me ask you, if you had the ability, if you had the legislative ability to make a law that architects or designers or builders would have to incorporate something fire resistant into their homes, what would you want it to be?
Well, I think for me, the most important thing is really where that home is located. When it's located in an area of topography that attracts fire and channels heat, for instance, in a saddle on the top of the hillside, would be to prohibit construction of a home in an area that is so in so much peril if a fire is to develop below it.
Because you're setting yourself up.
Well, it becomes indefensible. I don't care what you do with your fuel around that home. If a fire develops beneath some homes located in the type of topography you will see some building occur, there's literally nothing that can be done under extreme fire conditions to put that fire out. You'll have access problems where the roads are very narrow. You can't get fire apparatus there. Then when you do get there, if you get there, you have issues with water supply. So you have these very small 2.5 wharf hydrants that are set up around some of these homes where very low GPM. So the newer construction standards, you know, they mandate accessibility for Type 1 fire engines to have fire flow, water capable of being able to put out the amount of fuel that you have placed in this area. And these are modern construction techniques, but it's something, you know, there's economic feasibility that everybody has to consider. And as we, you know, move into the future, this is a discussion that needs to occur between the public, the agencies, the regulators, to make decisions about where we build, what type of materials we use, the accessibility and the type of water supply that's available, so that we have a chance to be successful when these fires break out.
Captain Kaufman, what would you want to legislate?
Yeah, I have to agree with Tony. I mean, we're building homes in what we call the wildland urban interface, where we've never had homes before. And then we wonder at the end of the day why so many homes were consumed by fire, and we just built it in a – it's almost like built in a fireplace.
You know what's funny? I just had a really weird thought. You know that old thing about if you build it, they will come? That goes for flames too, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And so I think – you know, I think – you know, we have to be smart about the way we build, about the way we take care of ourselves, about the way we create anti-fire sort of design. I think that in my home, I went with stones instead of grass, and I didn't go with wood chips, and I've got succulents, and all these sort of things that I think are helpful. Rain gutters. Tell me what you think about rain gutters, because I notice on a newsletter here you have here called Wildfire Property Assessment from Ventura County Fire. You talk about roofs and you talk about gutters.
Correct. So we're going with the metal rain gutters and not the vinyl rain gutters.
Vinyl. And that's because vinyl just it'll take off, right?
Yeah, vinyl is gonna.
It's a fuel.
Yeah, it's gonna going to be consumed by the fire, right?
So that's just another thing you can do for your home.
Correct.
And so maintaining those rain gutters so that there's no debris inside
of
them.
Yeah, you get a lot of leaves in there, and they get dry, and you're in trouble.
It's kindling.
Right.
So the same thing with some people are putting screens on top of them. Make sure that the screening isn't vinyl. Make sure that the screen is metal screening on top of the rain gutters.
Scott, what do you think about the whole notion of old homes and growing risk of fire?
I think it's something that needs to be taken very seriously. I think there needs to be some degree of education, which we're doing here today, which is good. But there needs to be, I think, some degree of legislation. You know, for example, every time I remodel a home, and which is often, there's some degree of environmentalism that I have to do to upgrade the home. But I don't have that on a fire safety. And when you consider, you know, we talk about structures, and for me, when I think about fire, I think about, I'm not saying no one else does, but I think about lives. I think about, you know, the difference of somebody getting out of their house. You know, and I look at an existing home that we're doing, two-story home, beautiful. I see the kids' rooms upstairs. I see mom and dad's room upstairs, and I see one stairway going up there. And I think, God, you know, the fire breaks out. You don't want fire, they don't have fire sprinklers. It's going right up there. Good luck. You know, one of the things I recommend to our clients is if they don't want to pay for the fire sprinklers in older homes, is at least to have something like a roll-down ladder. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but, you know, a little tool, you can get a glass break on the end of your knife, right? Have a little kit, pop the window, roll out. I mean, worst thing is you're in a fire, you smell it, and something interesting is when you go to sleep, so does your nose. So you cannot smell the fire while you're sleeping. So
is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
There's another campaign that we've been rolling out. I don't know if you guys have seen it. This it was a UL study that we've done with the fire department. They call Close Before You Doze. And that's another item that has been pushed out there, that there's a huge understanding that when you go to bed at night, you close your bedroom door. It's a remarkable safety measure. I've been in hundreds of house fires in my career, and I can tell you just a simple hollow core door being closed will be the difference between that room being destroyed and the room being untouched. And that translates to your respiratory system. If you're laying in bed and a fire breaks out and you've got smoke detectors, of course, which are a critical item, and you have that door shut, and a secondary means of egress, of course, is huge. But if you don't have those windows, and you're in that, by having that door closed, it buys you valuable time. And any of these municipalities like Ventura County, Los Angeles County, your firefighters are going to be there quick. And if you got smoke in the air, and you got your door shut, the chances of you perishing in that fire are very low, because we're going to get there and we're going to get you out.
I've got to tell you, you know, I go by this sort of thing that I learn something different every day. Thanks. I didn't know that my nose went to sleep.
And your taste buds. That's why people do that little practical joke. They put toothpaste in your mouth. You didn't know because you couldn't taste it. You were sleeping.
Nobody did that to me.
No one did that to you.
Nobody did. Not even in college. Nobody did that. You know, but I wasn't aware. So that's a very important thing to be aware of.
And I was reading some of the statistics on this, and I think it was that 44% of the smoke detectors in these fires were actually not working, even the ones that were there, and only 14% of them. So one of the things is, you know, we as a builder, we always hear that, God, that's a really annoying beep. Can you fix it? You know, my husband pulled it out, right? That's what people do. But you want to get smoke detectors that are not just hardwired. But here's an inexpensive thing you can do. You can get them monitored. You know, if you can't afford to get your entire home set up, you can do smoke detectors. They're actually on a Wi-Fi signal. You can get them monitored. You don't even have to be at home.
Yeah, I mean, today you don't need to wire up a lot of stuff.
We
have an alarm system at home, but we have a wired fire.
But you'd be
alarm.
Surprised how few people actually have that in their homes, big or small, and talking about these existing homes, because there's a lot more of these existing homes that we live in. You know, we see them as a treasure, right? You go home and you're like, wow, I finally made it. I got this beautiful home from 1930s. Well, you know, you may not live to the... through that. So it's important.
I've never been to a fatality house fire where there was working smoke detectors. I don't know about Captain Kaufman here, but I've never been to one. And anytime there was ever fatalities, there was always a lack of working smoke detectors. I'm not saying you can't die in a house fire with working smoking detectors. Very low probability. I've never seen it.
That's an interesting statistic.
Yeah.
That is definitely. So let me just sort of, you know, ask you guys, go around the room real quick and just sort of give us a couple of thoughts of things that you want to leave people with, things that they can do places they can go look for things, websites, all of that sort of thing. And why don't we start with Scott, and we'll go to Tony, and then we'll go to Captain Coffin.
I think you got to start with the small things. If you've got an existing home, you can do fire preventative paint on your building. You want to kind of hit the attic. You want to hit some of the perimeter landscaping. You also want to do things like check your fabrics on your drapes. You know, make sure that they're not that they're fire resistant. So start out with the small things, and then you move to the bigger. The smaller things could be the difference of saving a life.
Yeah, I would agree. And then, you know, starting by being ready by doing the small things, and then having that plan, having that emergency kit, and then taking it upon yourself to not wait for somebody to come and tell you to evacuate when you live in an area where it's a high fire danger and there's smoke in the air and we've got weather. Make preparations, have that emergency kit available, turn on that AM radio, and do your due diligence to listen to what's going on and leave the area before the situation deteriorates and you can't leave the area. We talked about the power lines coming down. You wait too long, the fire starts impinging your area, your power lines come down, your roads are blocked, and you've got a serious problem on your hands, and your cell phone may not work to be able to get firefighters there to get you out. So the situation can deteriorate rapidly and become deadly if you're not prepared. So to listen it up, turning your situational awareness on when that weather is with us, and listening to what's going on and being informed is really critical.
Yeah, that's right. Situational awareness are two very important words that you really have to know what's in front of you, behind you, and to each side. Because you may not think the fire's coming, and then you see a glow when you look off to the right, and you know you might have a problem here. So situational awareness is important, Captain.
Yeah, so I have two things. Now that we have everybody's attention, every jurisdiction has an alerting system. And I encourage people to go out and find the alerting system for your jurisdiction. In Ventura County, ours is vcalert.org. Go on there, sign up for it, put your phone number in there, and then if there is a disaster that's threatening your area, you will get notifications on your phone. We always encourage people to evacuate long before we try to get fire engines into the neighborhood, so that's super important. The second thing is, State of California has an app. It's free. It's called Ready for Wildfire. Just download that app. It has all kinds of great stuff. Some of the things it has on there is our Ready, Set, Go program. It also has listed all the major fires in the state of California. So if you have a family member that doesn't live local, that lives anywhere in the state of California, and you're worried about them, you can go to that app, look up one of the major fires, and you can call that fire to see what the status of that fire is at the moment.
And it's called Ready for Wildfire?
Ready for Wildfire. It's a Cal Fire app.
And Tony, let me just ask you for LA County Fire. What are the things that people should know about website and reverse 911?
Yeah, the big one for us is our Twitter feed with the LA County Fire Department. It's at LACOFDPIO, and that's going to have our most recent incident information. Any type of major incident that we have, that's our go-to information dissemination source, and we're going to be putting most recent fire information. And to look for that blue check mark on that Twitter feed, because there are a lot of Twitter feeds out there that look official and they may not be giving the most accurate information. So, we really encourage people to do their due diligence and get out there and register for those programs so that they can be alerted if wildfire is approaching the area that they live in.
And what I can tell you guys is I just downloaded the app. So you've got one happy customer here. Final thought? Anybody else?
I want to applaud you for doing this today, Hal, because I think, you know, what you're doing is you're bringing an awareness to something that there isn't enough awareness to, right? And if today we save one life from just doing this, and, you know, I think there's about 3,000 lives lost a year from fire, we've changed someone's life forever. So thank you.
Yeah, our partnership with members of the media like yourself, Hal, you know, Captain Kaufman, I'm sure can attest that you guys are really part of our emergency notification system. When the fire, the Woolsey was going on, and I'm sure during the Thomas, as PIOs, that's one of our actions is to pick up the phone and to call our news agencies, call our reporters, and give them critical information so they can roll it out for us. It's you guys are partners for, and that's the way we treat this relationship.
Some important tips there, and thanks for joining us. If you haven't already, please subscribe to What the How. And What the How. We'll see you next time.